on her wall. VOA 1 The Hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Gregory Stockel will tell us about the opposition to vaccine requirements at some colleges in the United States. Jill Robbins brings us a story from Reuters on the auto industry's worldwide shortage on some parts. John Russell takes us to Beirut and the efforts there to rebuild a museum 1 year after an explosion destroyed it. This story was reported by the Associated Press. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Finally, Dan Novak shares a story from Costa Rica. Reuters reports that officials there could ban fossil fuel exploration. But first, the education report.
American colleges are under pressure to protect students against COVID-19 as the new school year is about to start in autumn. The decision on how far to go will depend on legal and political issues, as well as the rising infection rates. Just last week, California State University, the largest four-year public university system in the United States, announced vaccine requirements for all students and employees. Two other major universities, Michigan State University and the University of Michigan, also joined the list of colleges with vaccine requirements. The schools noted concerns about the highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus as the reason. The announcements came after the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended fully vaccinated Americans to wear face coverings or masks, again in areas of rising infections. Joseph I. Castro is head of the California State University System. He said the increase of cases from the Delta variant is something the school must consider to maintain the health and well-being of students, employees, and visitors. Among the 4,000 colleges across the country, the Chronicle of Higher Education reported that about 645 colleges have required vaccinations for students or employees, but they have differing requirements. In many American states, Republican-led governments have banned vaccine requirements. School leaders face political pressure to limit their antivirus actions even among students living in crowded spaces. Opponents say the requirements step on personal freedoms. Some schools have dealt with opposition by offering awards for vaccination, like the chance to win free schooling and computers. They seek to raise student vaccination rates to 80% or higher. And a few have gone against the state's political leaders. Nova Southeastern in Florida is requiring employees to get the shots, and Nebraska Wesleyan is requiring vaccinations for its 2,000 students. Private colleges, however, have more legal space to set their own coronavirus rules. Major private universities with vaccination requirements include Harvard, Yale, and Stanford. Several others are Northwestern, Duke, and Notre Dame. Dorit Rubenstein Reese teaches vaccine law at the University of California. She said the legal question is whether colleges can require COVID-19 vaccines while they remain under federal emergency use permission. Reese said the courts will likely permit university leaders to take such steps to protect student health. But it could be difficult for them to go against political leaders who oppose vaccine requirements. Opponents have gone to federal court to fight against vaccine requirements issued by Indiana University, the University of Connecticut, and the California state system. In the first ruling among those cases, a judge last month rejected arguments from 8 students that Indiana University's requirements violated their constitutional rights to their own bodies. School officials said it is a clear path forward to removing limits on in-person classes and events. A lawyer representing the students asked, "Why are they being targeted for a vaccine that older people aren't required to take even though their risk is enormously greater?" Purdue University is another major university in the state of Indiana. The school does not require vaccinations. However, it is telling those without a record of vaccination that they could face weekly COVID-19 tests. Some schools cannot require vaccines for employees because of state laws or working agreements. Universities also permit exceptions to those with religious and medical reasons. But students and employees will have to go through COVID-19 tests and wear face coverings in public areas. Rachel, or Ray Applegate, is coming to Notre Dame this autumn. Applegate was vaccinated this summer. She feared a greater risk of COVID-19 exposure at school than at home in Evansville, Indiana. "I can understand people's concerns about not wanting to be told what to do. But to me, this getting vaccinated just makes sense," Applegate said. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Thanks, Gregory. Now let's hear from Jill Robbins. She tells us about the shortages on parts in the worldwide auto industry.
Car makers, including BMW, Fiat, Chrysler, and Peugeot, warned this week that the worldwide semiconductor processor shortage will continue in 2021 and beyond. The shortage has affected both production and sales of automobiles. Last year, car makers had to shut down plants because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, they have to compete with the consumer electronics industry for the limited supplies that were also affected by the health crisis. automobiles have become increasingly dependent on processors, also known as chips. They are needed for computers to help engines with better fuel economy and assist drivers in emergency braking. Without a good supply of chips, car makers have centered production on higher profit models. The higher prices keep their businesses going, even though they are selling fewer cars. Richard Palmer is the chief financial officer of Stellantis. The company sells cars under 14 brands, including Fiat, Chrysler, and Peugeot. He said the company did not expect chip supply to improve before the last 3 months of the year. That would mean a production loss of around 1.4 million vehicles for 2021. BMW so far has been less affected by the chip shortage than others. That is because of its strong relations with its suppliers. But the German carmaker warned that there will be more problems during the second half of this year. The longer the supply bottlenecks last, the more tense the situation is likely to become, BMW Chief Financial Officer Nicholas Peter said in a statement. We expect production restrictions to continue in the second half of the year. Those restrictions will cause a lower number of sales, he added. Car makers such as Tesla and Ford have also warned that for the near future, a lack of chips is slowing production. While we're making cars at full speed, the global chip shortage situation remains quite serious, Tesla CEO Elon Musk said last week. German chipmaker Infineon Technologies confirmed the shortage on Tuesday. The company said the latest wave of COVID-19 cases slows the production of materials in Asia, and the amounts of goods available have now hit all-time lows. Reinhard Ploss is the chief executive officer of Infineon. He told economists that a sharp limit to supplies is hurting the recovery of worldwide car markets. He observed that it will take time to get back to a balance between supply and demand. In our view, this will take until well into 2022, Ploss added. The IFO Economic Research Group in Munich, Germany, said Tuesday that the German car industry and its suppliers faced the worst chip supply shortage in 30 years. Its study showed that the shortage has affected 83% of companies, up from 65% in April. Oliver Felk is an IFO researcher. He said, "This is leading to production stoppages. The shortages of semiconductors will persist for some time to come." I'm Jill Robbins.
Thank you, Jill. Next, let's hear from John Russell.
More than a year after Beirut's port explosion, workers and artists are still repairing destruction at the city's Sirsak Museum. The museum, badly damaged by the August 4th, 2020 blast, has long provided a rare public and free space for art in Lebanon. It even remained open during Lebanon's 1975 to 1990 civil war. Sitting on hills in the Ashrafia neighborhood near the Beirut port, the 60-year-old Sirsak was the beating heart of Beirut's creative community. The country's only modern art museum, it has a collection of Lebanese art dating back to the late 1800s. The explosion not only damaged the Sirsak, it also damaged many independent small art spaces. But for the Sirsak, the blow was especially hard. This is because in 2015, the museum completed a nearly 10-year improvement project. Zeina Arada is the museum's director. Describing the effects of the explosion, she used the term overwhelm, meaning to cause someone to have too many things to deal with. At the beginning, we were overwhelmed with the reality and the extent of the damage, Arida said. The explosion tore through the 3-story building, breaking windows, pulling off doors, and wrecking everything down to the 4th underground level. The art collection was badly hit. At least 57 of the 130 pieces on display were damaged. Among them was Dutch artist Kees van Dongen's painting of Nicolas Sirsak, after whom the museum is named. Teams first spent 3 months cleaning dust and chemicals throughout the museum. Then came the art repairs. A year later, builders have put in windows, ceilings, and doors, and are now adding dividers and lights. Maya Husseini is the artist who worked on the stained glass windows during the 2015 rebuilding project. She is now working to rebuild the windows. It has been very hard to see my work of 30 years on the ground back to being sand, but it is important to rebuild the museum, Husseini said. I had to go back to my archive to dig out my designs to bring it back to how it was. An archive is a place where records are kept. After the blast, there was strong support to help bring the museum back to life. The Sirsak was able to raise nearly 80% of the estimated $3 million repair budget. The money came from the French and Italian governments, the International Alliance for the Protection of Heritage in Conflict Areas, UNESCO, private donors, and local groups. Raising the money marked a major success for a country dealing with the explosion, coronavirus restrictions, and an economic crisis. Lebanon's economic crisis has been an especially difficult issue for the museum. It really has been 2 years that were very stressful, and the kind of challenges we are facing are evolving, Arida said. Before the blast, she had to reduce the museum's working days to save money as the economy fell apart. The museum aims to reopen in the spring of 2022, even though the economic and security conditions remain unpredictable. In recent weeks, the museum has presented concerts and dance shows in its garden. The explosion pushed many artists to leave Lebanon. Arida said there is a need for new programs and financing to provide jobs to those who stayed. We need to rebuild the whole sector. The museum without the other organizations, without the surrounding heritage buildings, would never be the same, she said. I'm John Russell.
Thanks, John. And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. Our goal is to teach you American English by any means possible. In other words, by hook or by crook. By hook or by crook is a very old expression that is still used today. It means to try to reach a goal by any method or any means possible. For example, a friend of mine really wanted to get a job at this marketing company. He said he would do anything to get it. His exact words were, "I am going to get that job by hook or by crook." He is the most hardworking and determined person I know, so one way or another, he will definitely get that job. Today, one way or another is a more common way to say the same thing, as by hook or by crook. Here is a language secret. Some people like to use double negatives to express the idea of determination. A double negative happens when there are two negative words in the same sentence. Negative words include no, not, and nothing. Strictly speaking, double negatives are not correct grammar. But we still use them to intensify a statement. For example, you might hear, "There is no way he is not getting that job," which means he is definitely getting that job. Now let's get back to by hook or by crook. It is believed to have appeared in Britain in the late 1300s. No one is sure where exactly it comes from, but some word experts say the expression is about a problem faced by common people who would take wood from the forests of the king. The law said they could only take as much as their tools would allow, and those tools were called a shepherd's crook, a long rounded stick, and a bill hook, a cutting tool. So if you could collect the wood with your hook and crook, it was all yours. Here is another similar expression, come hell or high water. This means that you will get something done no matter how difficult or no matter what happens. No difficulties or obstacles will stop you. For example, let's say my best friend just moved to Washington, D.C. She has a great job, but is having trouble finding a new apartment. I know the city well, so I make it my mission to help her. Come hell or high water, I will find her an apartment. No matter the difficulties, I will do everything in my power to try to make this happen. Experts say this expression comes from overcoming destructive forces of fires or floods. Some say its first recorded use in the United States was in 1915, but others say it is older. If you do something come hell or high water, you are determined to do it. You will do it despite the difficulties involved. By hook or by crook means you will find any method to succeed. Come hell or high water means you will find a method to overcome a barrier. We here at VOA Learning English know that our listeners want to learn English very badly. By hook or by crook, and come hell or high water, you will. And that's all the time we have for this Words in Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo. And finally, here is Dan Novak with a story from Costa Rica. Officials there are considering a permanent ban on the exploration of fossil fuels.
Costa Rican lawmakers are considering a law this week that would permanently ban fossil fuel exploration and production. The popular tourist destination is trying to have zero carbon emissions by 2050. Costa Rica started efforts to ban fossil fuel exploration in 2002 under President Abel Pacheco. This ban was supposed to end in 2014, but was later extended until 2050. The new bill, supported by President Carlos Alvarado's administration, would take the ban further by making it permanent. Cristiana Figueres is a former UN climate official and former Costa Rican government official who has supported the bill. She told Reuters, "Our concern now is to remove the temptation, either today or at any time tomorrow, for there to be any current or future government who might think that returning to fossil fuels of the past century is actually a good idea for our country." Only a few other countries have banned fossil fuel exploration and production. Belize, for example, bans exploration and drilling in all its waters. France also hopes to have a similar ban by 2040. Costa Rica has rich plant and animal life in its jungles and coastal areas. It has never explored or extracted fossil fuels and gets 99% of its electricity from renewable sources, including hydropower, which uses fast-running water to make electricity. The country of 5 million people aims to have net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Net zero means that the greenhouse gas emitted is no more than the amount removed from the atmosphere. A permanent ban would send a powerful message to the world, Costa Rican lawmaker Paula Vega said. A pro-exploration movement has been trying since 2019 to gain support for a public vote on oil and gas exploration. The bill for a permanent fossil fuel ban has faced opposition by some politicians who argue that the resources could help the Central American country's economy. Costa Rica's gross domestic product fell 8.7% in 2020 during the pandemic. A public vote on fossil fuel exploration, however, has never been brought. Figueres was one of the lead planners of the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. She said fossil fuel extraction for economic recovery makes absolutely no sense. Costa Rica's fossil fuels have so far not proven to be commercially usable. Were we to have them, we probably wouldn't see any income from them until at least 10 to 15 years from now, when the demand for oil and gas is actually going to be even less than it is now, Figueres said. Lawmakers will discuss the bill this week, but a vote may not come before October, one lawmaker told Reuters. Figueres said she believes the ban has a good chance at being passed. To have small countries actually take the lead is very important, she said. Just because Costa Rica is tiny, it doesn't mean that we don't have a voice. I'm Dan Novak.
Thanks, Dan. And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.